are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna do?
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and
this
women
call is
who
being
fought
recorded
against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood. Together, for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com, blacktalkradionetwork.com, and I'm your host, Brother Oshi. Excited today, of course. Got my good brother and friend on, the primary researcher and great historian, Brother Rinoko Rashidi. Looking forward to the conversation. You're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. If you cannot listen to this program live, you can go to the archives at timeforanawakening.com. Click on podcast, and then once you click on that, it'll open up and you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming here on Time for an Awakening Media. On Mondays, my program, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., immediately following my program, on Monday and Wednesdays is the Black People Matrix from 1 to 3 with Franklin Jones, the Black People Matrix. Monday evenings from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, followed by Let's Buy Black 365. And then again, and also Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. Tuesday's Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. Good program last night. I had a chance to listen to a good portion of it. From 8 to 10, Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness from 8 to 10. And then on Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy, Relationships with Joy and Troy from 7 p.m. until. On Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore at 10 p.m. from 10 to 12 on Saturday. And then from on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Revive with Sister PLC. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Every Monday through Friday here on Time for an Awakening Media, the Warren Ballantyne Show, Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. We Buy Black. Get everything you need from We Buy Black. Get the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is We Buy Black. Also, too, Africa for the Africans, Brother Bomani Tayemba. Africa for the Africans.org. I'm trying to run through this because I'm going to get to my guest. I know he's hanging on. Shrine of the Black Madonna, located in the West End. They have everything. They have furniture, clothing, artwork, the Nagas footwear, the red, black, and green. And, of course, they have books. They also have an African Holocaust Museum. They have a class on Saturdays, Brother Olatunji, African history class, Know Thyself, from 1:30 to 3:30. But if you can't attend that, but you'd like to get that information, they now have a multimedia library with 7 terabytes of African enlightenment at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Another bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall is the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. They have books, cards, greeting cards, all kinds of good stuff. the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. The number to call is 404-346-3263. And the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, my good brother Kazimde Ajamu, and he had the first annual Black Dot Cultural Arts Festival this past weekend. And he's, I'm quite sure, he'll start gearing up for next year. Black Dot Cultural Arts Festival and Bookstore. And, okay, us lifting up the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa, us lifting us. Go to usliftingus.com and become a member of the co-op. Tomorrow, Thursday evening, have the Us Lifting Us broadcast on Blog Talk Radio. To listen, you can dial 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789 for Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa, cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Baba Baruti and Ya Sister Ya Baruti, Akaben Institute, we're constantly promoting them and asking you to make payments to Akaben Institute. Make your check or money order out to Akaben Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. If you'd like to use Cash App or PayPal, you can do so using the dollar sign and YAAM Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I, and make your payments. Also, too, I'm supporting my good sister, Gabrielle Arrill, Sister Gabby, in the northeastern part of Haiti, in the rural part. She's doing fantastic work. Go on her website and check her out. Sanjay-Haiti, Sonje-Haiti, AYITI.org. Black Talk Radio Network Media Project. Go to blacktalkradionetwork.com on the page. Scroll down on the right side. You can donate to the 2019 Media Fund, Black Talk Radio Network. It's how we survive here. And believe me, it's a great thing to donate to. Okay. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Yesterday, October 1st. The best way to predict the future is to create it. Divine Bradley. You can imagine a world where Ma'at is the norm, where it is spoken and enacted by Africans toward each other and those deserving of our respect with our ancestors' precision and reverence. You can imagine us being brought back in line with honorable traditions where love and truly reciprocal and altruistic. Can you imagine a world where being spiritual is a way of life, not a silly masquerade? Can you imagine a people who, again, from a timeless circle without rupture? Can you imagine a people who act as if being civil to each other defines them as a civilization? Can you imagine a time and a place without predators, without prey, where generosity and kindness are taken, where generosity and kindness are not taken for weakness? And where selfishness and meanness are not prized aspirations. In this time and space, our sisters shed more tears of joy than pain, and brothers practice for peace, not war. Here, our righteous rage has been satisfied, and war against Africans is never uttered for fear of terror it would unleash on that fool. Can you imagine a world where truth is common and lies disbelieved because of their source? Where African people can again be whole. If it is to happen, we will have to do it. Nothing which brought us to this Nirit will change on its own. Things will only change through the will and force of those who recognize evil in its gluttonous, malevolence, jealousy, intent, and who firmly believe in the righteousness of their cause. Affirm, I'm imagining an African world into a reality. Affirm, I'm imagining an African world into reality. October 2nd. African women were never singled out for marginalization, subjugation, and alienation. The whole of African women in the family is not subordinate, but rather complementarity to that of the man. Unlike Europeans, Africans regard women as indispensable to the home and society. Catherine Obajunye. The removal of power from European women by European men was accomplished both by destroying the ideological and legal foundations of equality in African society through bringing their own women even further to their knees. Africa was where Greek women began to look to for their models of womanhood. The Greek offensive against females, although more personal, was indefinitely more severe and violent. But even this assault on Yorugu females did not come close to their murder, rape, and terrorization during the infamous Inquisition. Generations of genocide left its imprint deeply on their psyche. Imagine mothers preparing their sons to rape and ravage their daughters and daughters who had been embraced powerlessness. No other people went through the phase where they raped and killed as many as their women as possible. And there is no doubt that the millions raped and sexually tortured served the perverted pleasures of a European male. The pattern of rape followed the established by their very gods that they said they had created, that created their world. European gods raped their goddesses. So why would mortal European men not rape mortal females? Like father, like son. Affirm, I honor African women. Affirm, I honor African women. The Inyese Sema, Daily Revolutionary Thought. Let me read this again before I go to my guest. And I know I have him on a line. But I've been reading this for the last few months because I think it's important as we continue to understand that this program is about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. This is Kwame Nkrumah, 1961, The Speech of Freedom. I believe strongly and sincerely that with deep-rooted wisdom and dignity, the innate respect for human lives, the intense humanity that is our heritage, the African culture, united under one federal government, will emerge not as just another world bloc to flaunt its wealth and strength, but as a great power whose greatness is indestructible because it is built not on fear, envy, and suspicion, nor want at the expense of others, but founded on hope, trust, friendship, and dedicated to good of all mankind. Kwame Nkrumah. This is what Kwame Nkrumah also said. If we do not approach the problems in Africa with a common front and a common purpose, we will be haggling and wrangling among ourselves until we are colonized again and become the trolls of a far greater colonialism than we suffer heretofore. Osagie for Kwame Nkrumah. Brothers and sisters, let me introduce my good brother and friend, Brother Dr. Renoka Rashidi. Good morning, Brother Dr. Renoka Rashidi. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, brother. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you today, man?
All right. You gave a lot of information out there, man.
Yeah, I try to throw stuff out there every morning that I come on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and, promote things that I think that the community should be made aware of and should participate in, Because, like I said, the whole purpose of the program is to promote independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people.
Well, I hope we're resonating. I took a group to Mexico last year. I do these, group tours 3 or 4 year. And this was one time when the people were fairly young. Most of the people were like in their late 20s, very early 30s. And one of them asked me, had I ever heard of Ivan Van Sertima? Another one said, do you know who Francis Welsing is?
Uh-huh.
And so for us in the, the African consciousness movement, for lack of a better word, who've been around for a while, that's laughable.
It is
a part of our life.
That's right.
But I worry sometimes that we're passing this information effectively along to the next generation of people. And will they be able to appreciate the things we're talking about and the ancestors whose memories we honor.
Yeah, I do too. I agree with you, Baba. I agree with you. And that's why.
But all you could do is your best.
Yeah.
You put the information out there and you try to live, feel good about yourself. I think that we are, you know, so many of our elders have been saying this for a long time. Leonard Jeffries always likes to say we're on a victorious path. And I remember the commentaries of Dr. Ben and Dr. Clark and Ivan Van Sertima. And, you know, the thing is now we're the elders, whether
yes,
we like
are.
It or not. That's
yes,
just the way it is. It's our turn.
Yeah.
To step up to the plate and mess up and have victories and triumphs and defeats, because that's human.
That's right. It is. It's human.
Sometimes I think that we don't allow our heroes to be human. We put them on pedestals, and then we find out that they were just as human as everybody else, perhaps even more so. I would imagine there were times when Harriet Tubman questioned herself. Maybe she was afraid and wondered if this was the right path. And I would imagine that Marcus Garvey must have got really, really frustrated mm-hmm. sometimes and, you know, thought about, hey, is it worth it? And Malcolm. But to me, what makes them great, what continues to make them great, is that in spite of their humanness, that they kept going,
right.
That they never gave up. I tell people all the time, you can slow down, you can take a break, you can sit down and rest for a while, but you can't give up, because once you give up, you become a part of the very problem that we're fighting against.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So that's my 2 cents worth, brother. It's been a nice show. Have a good day. Talk to you about
that. Peace out. Peace out.
So yeah. How are you, brother?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing well. I'm doing well. I'm on a path to get back to being more healthy, because I've noticed that I'm having some pains here and there, and it's tough to do this and that. And so I remember 5 years ago, you know, I've been living here in Atlanta now 5 years, man. Yeah.
Okay.
And a year prior to that, you know, I started to becoming more healthy, and then I got here and I started going back into the same routines I did prior to that. And so now I'm at a situation where I'm going to be diligent. In fact, I got have myself a timetable and everything like that, man. But you know, I'm going to tell you, I've been looking at this trip from January 21st through February 4th, 2020 to Senegal, Gambia, and Guinea-Bissau. And really, it is a good trip. I looked at the itinerary. I looked at the cost. It really is, man. For anybody who wants to go to Africa, in the West Africa, and have an opportunity, for $4,000, $3,800, you know, double occupancy, and you're offering three countries in about 2 weeks, man, I think that's a very good thing. And I think that, you know, people should just jump on it. And I'm contemplating.
Yeah, it is going to be a good tour. It has a lot of different dimensions, as you mm-hmm. say, three countries. You know, very, very good hotels, very African-centered. Mm-hmm. You know, I finally got a travel agent who I share a common vision of African heritage and African travel.
Oh, that's great.
And so we've had some really, really successful tours over the last... I've been working with this sister since 2016. And we've had a number of tours, but some of them stand out. We did a tour to Namibia. Mm-hmm. A lot of us have never even heard of Namibia. It used to be known in the colonial period as Southwest Africa.
Exactly.
A beautiful country, huge country, with a lot of different kinds of black folk, a lot of different kinds of African people. Mm-hmm. And we were able to actually meet with the people that a lot of us may think of as exotic, the people commonly known as Bushmen. Their name is San.
The San people,
we had
yes.
a chance to spend time with them and have a libation with them. Mm. And the people called the Himba. Now, these are black folk, and these are what I call very traditional people. We've done some wonderful tours of Ethiopia, West Africa, Mexico. The next group I take will be in about 3 weeks. I'm going to take a group to Kemet this month. And then next month, I take a group to Sudan. Not many people get a chance to go there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we do the West African trip. We get to see three different groups of three different African nations. And also, we're able to see three African countries that were colonized by three different groups of Europeans. Each group of Europeans had their technique or techniques for controlling the people they colonized. So in this case, we'll see the damage done by the French
in Senegal,
the English, and the Portuguese.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll also get an opportunity to explore the enslavement experience. In Senegal, of course, you have Gori Island. They have an infant's dungeon there. If you can imagine a dungeon for children, I've seen it. I've been in it. You know, I photographed it. And then in Gambia, of course, you have the birthplace of Kunta Kinte. Or at least, let me correct myself. I've been saying the birthplace of Kunta Kinte, but maybe just the place that he was taken from. A lot of us forget that over a period of time, it became harder and harder to catch our ancestors. And so you had to go deep into the interior.
Mm-hmm.
And in many cases, after these sisters and brothers were captured, they were marched to the coast, perhaps for hundreds of miles. And I've been told that most of the Africans who died as a result of enslavement died in Africa itself from the time they were captured. And I don't think we always take that into consideration. When we talk about the numbers of our ancestors who died as a result of enslavement, I don't even know if those are factored in.
Yeah.
And the devastating effect that it would have had on Africa. And then Guinea-Bissau, it'll be, for me, the first time I've been to that country. It'll make, I've been saying that I've visited 124 countries in the last 20 years, but somehow I seem to have misplaced about five countries. Now I can only count 119. That ain't bad.
That ain't bad at all.
So this will either be 120 or 125.
Yeah.
Let me say one other thing about Guinea-Bissau.
Okay.
Guinea-Bissau is the birthplace of a brother named Biojos Bienko. And I bet very few people have heard of him because I had not until quite recently. He is the great African freedom fighter in colonial Colombia. He represents the first generation of Africans captured by the Spanish and brought to the Americas. And he led a revolt. And he helped establish what is identified as the first free town of African people in the Americas, a place called Palenque in 1603. So we will visit his birthplace. And then later in the year, my next tour, in fact, will be to Panama and Colombia, and we will go to that very town in Colombia. I wanted to share that with you.
Panama and Colombia. Yeah. And, you know, that's the thing that's why – you know, if you ever heard me do a libation, I'll always say, we were not slaves. We were captives. We were not slaves.
Yeah.
A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master. We've never submitted. We resisted on the continent, the Middle Passage, in this hemisphere. We continue to resist today. We are captives. And see, and the European has pushed this idea that we were slaves. And you hear all the time, even our people, yeah, they went over to Africa and brought back slaves. No, they brought back human beings who they put into servitude, who they dogged out, tried to erase their memory and so forth. They weren't slaves. They were human beings. They were Africans. You know, they were captives. You know, they were imprisoned in their both in their body and later into their minds. We aren't slaves, but when we think of our ancestors as slaves, we have such a negative opinion of them, you know? That's why I call
we can change that. For one thing, we have to destroy the myth of the docile slave.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you're doing, that these captured Africans fought back. There are a number of myths that we need to eradicate in our own minds. And in our own communities. For example, one of the ones I get quite frequently is, I don't even want to be called an African because Africa is named after either a Roman general or another man named Leo Africanus. We hear these stories all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That Scipio Africanus is the Roman general who led the defeat of the Carthaginians. And so some people think that Africa is named after him. That's deeply insulting to me. His name means conqueror of Africa. So his name is derived from Africa. He didn't give the continent its name. And then other people think that Africa is named after a man named Leo Africanus. Now, Leo Africanus was a brother who was captured and enslaved. and he became, to my understanding, the private property of Leo, Pope Leo X. This brother was so bright that Leo X, the Pope, eventually, you know, gave him his freedom, or however term you want to use, and he became a very distinguished scholar. So the name Leo Africanus means Leo the African. What I would like for our people to do is to be able to dig a little deeper and be able to and prepare themselves to do a little bit more research. Don't rely on YouTube and Wikipedia and bits and pieces of information here and there to be our only source of knowledge. To be able to dig a little bit and, you know, dig into these real basic mythologies that's around Africa. Africa is not a jungle. Africa has less jungle or rainforest than any continent of comparable size in the world. You know, Africans didn't call themselves in ancient times tribes. Mm-hmm. You know, they were people, nations, ethnic nations. Groups, linguistic groups. So at some point in time, I think that it's good just to go over a lot of the basics, because people like you and me who've been doing this for a while, we kind of take it for granted, I think. Mm-hmm. But most sisters and brothers, I think this information is very, very new, and we want to reach out to them as well.
No doubt, because I saw a couple, you know, I follow you and I see you all the time on Facebook and all the stuff that you put out, and I love it. I saved a lot of it. And I seen a couple of days ago you were talking about words having meaning. I did a program last week, or the week before last. The whole program was about words have meaning. Because it bothers me sometimes when we say stuff and not understanding the image that it projects. See, and discipline. They use the word discipline in a society when they really mean punishment, but they use the word discipline because of the negative connotations that the word punishment has. They mean punishment. You know, but of course you are Dr. Renoka Rashidi, so you attained that position because you went to school, and what did they call those studies? Exactly, they call them disciplines, you know, because you have to have self-imposed order for you to go through the rigors of the study once you get that syllabus or whatever the classwork is to do it to get, and then the dissertations and so forth. You have to be disciplined, self-imposed order. And so when our young men and folks don't impose any order on themselves and they're out of control, then society will, you know, impose order on them. And that's why they build all these jails. It's punishment. You know, I heard it just the other day when they were talking about the NFL. They're going to enact some discipline on him because of what he did or didn't do. You know, no, they're going to punish him, you know. So, you know, I think the correct words for us, I don't care about the other parts of the society, but for us as African people, we need the correct words because it gives us the vision of what we're talking about, you know, because I have been on the kick about not calling our people slaves for a long time, maybe 20 years.
I know.
You know?
I know.
Yeah. And it bothers me, because when they hear that word, I saw a cartoon, Bugs Bunny with Yosemite Sam. You know, back about, I don't know, a couple of months ago, you know, where Bugs Bunny puts on the big stovepop hat and a beard on, and he goes up to him and says, "What's this I hear you beating slaves?" You know, I said, "I ain't beating no slaves," you know. But these are the images that are constantly, even to this day, even though we know that they're wrong, but they're constantly in our psyche, they're in our subconscious.
Yes, it's just the images are a bit more subtle these days.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But that doesn't really change the content. You know, I think that sometimes we forget that the people who are holding us down, they're not stupid. They have a strategy too.
Mm-hmm.
And they think long term.
That's right.
A lot of us are so caught in day-to-day life, which is understandable oppression, that we're not able to get beyond tomorrow, the next payday, next month, next year.
Mm-hmm.
There are other people who have long-term plans, and they realize that, you know, the things that, well, in other words, I realize that Willie Lynch was a fictional character, but that those principles are still very much utilized in terms of divide and conquer and sowing confusion in our community.
Right. You're right. And it's done by intent. Like, you know, they have a plan. We must have a plan. And what is our plan? Because their plan is to maintain and sustain the privilege that they created for themselves at whatever cost. Even if it means getting rid of some other Caucasians, you know, that ain't no problem for them. You know, even though their numbers are dwindling and have been dwindling for decades, they don't care. They just want to make sure those who have wealth maintain wealth. And because the situation here in this country is so economically out of proportion, you know, and that's why we keep holding out hope and thinking that somehow, some way, Europeans are going to have an epiphany and look at our situation and, you know, say, well, you know, on paper, we say all men are created equal. On paper, we have all these laws and so forth that we believe would create a just and righteous and honest society. In practice, that's another thing. But yet we keep thinking that's going to happen. But, you know, it will never happen. It hasn't happened. It's not happening now. Hell, it ain't going to happen. And so what do we do?
Well, brother, since we are more or less having a conversation, which is not a bad thing, tell me your reaction to the conviction of the former police officer in Dallas yesterday. What is your reaction to that?
Well, once I thought that I didn't know the makeup of the jury. The makeup of the jury and the judge was very important in the situation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Particularly, I think the judge.
Yes.
And a serious, no-nonsense black woman. That could have been her son who was killed.
Exactly.
There.
I think that was very important. And so her being found guilty, and which is logical because, I mean, whether or not she couldn't, you know, think about where her apartment was, she was so tired and so forth that she opened, I mean, she went to her apartment to put the key in, but the door opened and then still thinking it's her apartment, and then she walks in and so forth. She didn't handle, and of course, she didn't handle it correctly. And a man was dead because of her inability to handle that situation correctly, her problem. And so, to me, I thought that was a just. I'm waiting to hear what the sentencing will be. I'm hoping she gets some serious time, you know. Also, too, I don't know if you know this. Some emails or texts have came out showing her talking about us in derogatory ways. In fact, one of them was, I wear black because I'm already ready for your funeral. You know, so the whole idea and her mentality, but we have to understand that policing today is about, you know, to be that buffer between those who have nothing and that small group who have every damn thing, you know. So it's about comply or die. It's not about protect and serve. And so the policing today is a lot different that, you know, it's. And when you shoot, you're not shooting to wound. You're shooting to kill. And so, you know, once she made that move.
What surprised me is that she was not, I thought she would have been, if convicted at all, which shocked me, the fact that she was convicted of anything, it would have been for the lesser charge.
Right, like manslaughter.
As opposed to the murder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought so, too. It'd be manslaughter, especially being a police officer, saying this, that, and the other. But in her testimony, it was pointed out that she didn't do enough to ascertain whether this person was, you know, that she should truly fear for her life. But, of course, that is the catchphrase for the police to shoot and kill with impunity, you know.
Let me tell you about some of my current projects, brother. Let me share that with you and update the audience since I've been on. A few things I did want to talk about. We had decided, that the theme for this morning's show would be African history before 1619, or ancient African history, since so much fuss is being made about 1619. And I shouldn't say it that way. I suppose anytime we get a chance to acknowledge aspects of our history, that's a good thing.
I agree.
But we have to be the ones that are in charge of the narrative. Otherwise, it'll be used to oppress or misdirect us. And we don't need any more of that than we already have. So I've been doing a number of things in regards to that. And I, as you know, I have these hundreds of thousands of wonderful photographs. So I've spent the last couple of years, this year in particular, archiving them, particularly the museum photos, and especially the museum photos that go before this enslavement period. And so I've been able to come up with three products, projects that I want to share with you.
Okay.
And you'll have to give me your mailing address so I can send you some. One is my 2020 calendar. Now, last year I did one on for Black women,
right,
called Queens of the Nile. This time I've done one, the words of Dr. Ben, Black Men of the Nile, Kings of Kemet and Kush. And so you have a number of the most important monarchs in the history of Nile Valley civilization. The artwork is really, really beautiful, all original photographs, and a 275-page biography on each one of these brothers and the times in which they lived.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very, very, very proud of that. It'll be the sort of project that you will want any time of the year. It doesn't matter if it's 2020 or beyond. The information is certainly there.
Right.
You have quotes by famous Africans, African men historically, the birth dates of important brothers throughout history. So that's one. And then two other products and projects. One is an Olmec scroll. Now, the Olmec are particularly important to us in light of our discussion about African history before 1619. The Olmec civilization is the parent civilization of the Americas. And what stands out most about them are these massive stone heads. There are 20 of them, and they all have the features of Africans. So I've been able to identify all 20 of them. When Ivan Van Sertima wrote his famous book, They Came Before Columbus, only 12 or 14 of those heads have been identified. This is in the middle 1970s, so now we found 20 of them, and they're all represented here. And the background on the scroll and the poster that is the complement to it is the Leventa Pyramid. And the Leventa Pyramid is the first pyramid in the Americas, and it's a pyramid built by the Olmec, who had an African element. So I'm working on those. As we speak, I'm making plans to, what were you going to say?
Sorry. I was just going to say, that pyramid is in Cancun?
No. This is in La Venta, Mexico.
La Venta, Mexico.
It might surprise people to know that Mexico probably has more pyramids even than Africa does. There are hundreds of them.
Is that right?
I think the question is, yeah, what is a pyramid?
Mm-hmm.
Because you hear people say there are pyramids in China, there are pyramids in the in Japan. You know, one brother says, colleague of mine says, there's a pyramid on Mars. So the question becomes, what is a pyramid? And I think that what we oftentimes call pyramids in Mexico, like the one at Chichen Itza, is more of a temple, you know, with a pyramidal type of shape. But this is a pure pyramid, like the ones in the Nile Valley. And it's in La Venta, Mexico. It's covered with grass now. But I take groups there, and those who are fit can actually climb on top of it. And so I think that there is something to be said when people say that ignorance nowadays is a choice. There's a lot of information out there.
Yes, it is.
We need the support of the community to finance these things. So all of these calendars and posters and scrolls are all available even before we go any further. Let me give my contact information.
Okay.
And that is runoko@hotmail.com, R-U-N-O-K-O @hotmail.com. Or after the show, you can call me at area code 323-803-8663. That's 323-803-8663. I'll go to my website, which is drrenoco.com, drrenoco.com. I was also very pleased that you were able to get a colleague and a friend of mine on your show a week or two ago, Sister Dorothy Beth.
Yes.
She gave a lot of information, I'm sure, about African American history.
Yes, she did, and she'll be coming back on. Yeah. Yes, she will.
Good. The
best.
So what I'm doing now is probably as soon as the show is over, I'm going to purchase my ticket for my next set of research travels. I fly to Amsterdam on Monday, and I'll be doing a series of African heritage programs. A lot of people are not aware. Well, I don't know. I suppose many people are aware that there's a significant African population in the country called the Netherlands.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, Amsterdam, Rotterdam. So I'll be doing a series of lectures and researches there. And then I have to decide if I will go to France or Italy or Portugal, you know, to research the museums there. And, of course, my daughter lives in Paris. I try to be
always try to make that trip.
And I am a historian.
Yeah.
And then I take the group to Egypt and then Sudan and then back to Europe, particularly Italy. And I'm going to do a national research tour of Italy. So those are the projects that I'm working on. So if a person would want to purchase one of my books or make a donation or the calendars, the scrolls, the posters, that would be wonderful. I do have a GoFundMe page, mm-hmm. and you can find me at the website. Find it on the website, again, drrenoco.com. Well, I wanted to share that with the audience.
Well, I want you to share that again before our time is up in the next hour, because it's vitally important. Because I think that the work that you do and the work that many others who are reclaiming, recapturing, and restoring the history of our people is vitally important for our future. You know, because the whole idea, if you've never believe you've done nothing. That's why it's important that we're talking about the history of our people prior to 1619, because we've been led to believe that we were running around the jungle with a rag up our ass and a bone through our nose waiting for Europeans to come bring us civilization. And of course, now we know nothing could be further from the truth, but there are still a lot of our people who believe that. They believe that we were just a group of people here and there, you know, and we hadn't done anything. And you know, surely the ancient Kemetic civilization wasn't ours, you know, because that is whitewashed, even though Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop proved, him and Dr. Theophilo Bingham, they proved it. What is that, in 74 or 75 in Cairo?
I think 74.
74.
UNESCO.
In 74. They proved it. And the smoking gun for the proof was development of the melanin dosage test. He could take the melanin out of the mummies to say how much melanin was in the skin and in the body of those people, proving it. But still today, you know, even as we speak today, if you watch National Geographic, the Learning Channel, Discovery Channel, you know, PBS, whatever, if they show a dramatization or illustration of ancient Kemet, they show people looking Caucasians. Ah, but you know, Renoco, if they show somebody serving somebody, what they going to look like? Exactly.
Well, we could do that even in modern times.
Yeah.
You do, for example, a movie about prisons, you know that's going to be full of black people.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, we don't control our narrative.
We don't, and it's important. And the people who do, you know, how do they write it? What do they say? How do we look in it? See, we don't. So, you know, I know we have a struggle, you know, and to me, that's why I support you, because to me, the people who are doing this work, if we say we are great, where's the proof to our greatness? You know, where's that at?
All right, let's do this with the time that we have. Let's just do a geographic overview of the African presence, or highlights of the African presence in world history globally before 1619, before the Maafa. Let's look briefly at other parts of Africa, and then we can go to Asia, we can go to Europe, and we can finish in the Americas. Let's just do a synopsis.
Okay.
Let's give some ammunition for how we, in the battle for the liberation of our minds, let's create a shovel historically that we can use to dig ourselves out of the hole that we're in So we've talked about the Nile Valley a little bit. We spend a lot of time with Kemet. In fact, that's a criticism that we get that has some level of validity. People say that we spend too much time with the Nile Valley. I don't think we spend too much time with the Nile Valley, but I do think that we have to make a more concerted effort to connect the Nile Valley with the rest of Africa.
Right.
So that it doesn't appear that civilization in Africa is confined to only one portion of it. So I think that's very, very important that we do. I had a wonderful talk with Tony Browder yesterday. We've developed a very close relationship now. You know, Tony is financing me an archaeological dig in Luxor, Egypt, and the things that they're finding are really, really remarkable. So we talked yesterday, and we talked about where we go from here. And he mentioned that one of the things he'd like to do is to explore Ethiopia more. And not just northern Ethiopia. He seems to be convinced now that the southern part of Ethiopia, among the people called the Oromo, is actually the fountainhead of Nile Valley civilization. So we had a long discussion about that.
Okay.
And then in the Horn of Africa also, you have the ancient civilization called Punt.
Right.
Now, Dr. Ben used to talk about the land of Punt all the time.
Right.
And this is where the finest ebony and incense came from, and it seemed to be something like a sacred land. In Southeast Africa, you have where the kingdoms of the Swahili coast that traded with China and India. And then, of course, you have Great Zimbabwe, or what we call Great Zimbabwe, this magnificent stone city or series of stone cities in what is now Zimbabwe and apparently South Africa. And what we're hearing about civilization and ancient cities in South Africa really staggers the imagination. We're hearing fantastic things about the antiquity of African civilization in a part of Africa that we haven't looked at carefully enough. And then, of course, we've all heard of Ghana, Mali, Songhai.
And
those are the ones we, I think, are kind of given. But we forget sometimes even the magnificence of those civilizations. And in Nigeria, you have Nok, N-O-K, which is contemporary with the last phases of ancient Egypt itself. And then, of course, in northern Africa, in what is now Tunisia, you have Carthage. So civilization in Africa was continent-wide. Mm-hmm. And I would like to see more connections. For example, in going through my photo archives, as I was mentioning, I found some pieces that I photographed in Tunisia. There's a museum in Tunis called the Bardo Museum. Mm-hmm. And it's the best museum in the country. And they had images of Bes and Aset and Ptah from Kemet that are 600-800 BC. And so it would seem that there was that the extensions of Nile Valley civilization, in other words, these civilizations don't seem to have been isolated from one another, that Africa was connected in ancient times. And so these are really, really basic things that, you know, that I wanted to share in terms of looking at the continental aspect of African civilization, of which the Nile Valley civilization, of course, was the most spectacular.
Right. Right.
And long lived part.
I think that's important, and I think that's what Dr. Jop and Thelathilio Benga were claiming, that there is a continent-wide cultural African unity that is, and all the other things are superficial, that was, you know, that was very important. And I think Obinga connected it linguistically, language-wise. So, you know, the information is there, but because, once again, as you said earlier, Baba, we don't control the narrative. The narrative is constantly being controlled by Europeans. And
Well, we got to step up our game, man.
Mm-hmm.
We have work to do. And that is very exciting to me. One thing I think is also important to point out, at least for me, it's very important, I think, to like what you do, to embrace what you do. I think that I'm a very good historian for African people. And if I am, one of the reasons for that is because I really like it. I enjoy the intellectual stimulation. I enjoy the research. Mm-hmm. I think it was Dr. Clark who used to say, we have to nurture these things in our young people. If we see young people with a particular talent or ability, we need to foster that and nurture that and guide it and push it in a good direction. Because obviously history is very, very important, but we need so many things to make our nation great. I guess that's one of the reasons you got to give another shout out to Brother Baruti. Mm-hmm. And the work that they're doing with the Akhavan Institute there in Atlanta, doing marvelous work and training young minds.
Yes.
And we can't say enough good things about that.
And we need more of it.
A lot more.
Yeah, I wish I'd win the lottery so I could have, you know, these institutions, not just here in this country, in every major city, but in Africa as well, and in the diaspora. I mean, I think the survival for African people relies on our unity globally. And particularly our unity on the continent to control the land and resources. It is, to me, it's imperative.
You know, that's one of the reasons that I spend so much time on Facebook, mm-hmm. because I sometimes get frustrated, and then I get these wonderful letters from these young people in the motherland, you know, who I know don't have a lot of money. They can't afford, in many cases, the books and stuff, you know, but they can. They can receive information through social media.
Right.
Many of them are so grateful mm-hmm. that there's a voice or voices that are putting Africa in a positive light. It's very encouraging and uplifting for them. So we have a lot of work to do, and it's a daunting task, but I love it.
I know.
I love it. I wouldn't have it any other way.
I hear you.
I feel blessed to be able to do the things that I do.
And that's
now,
why
I
support
you. Some more support.
Yeah. Well, that's why I support you. And I encourage, I encourage, you know, through this medium here, you know, I encourage all the time for people to support the work that you do, Baba Baruti and Tony Browder. I support y'all personally, but I'm asking the listeners, why is it important?
We appreciate that.
You know, why it's important. Well, listen, we're going to take a break. We got some callers. And I'm quite sure they've been holding on for a while. I'm going to get to those after this break. So, brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. I'm on the horn with my good brother and good friend, Baba Dr. Rinoko Rashidi. So you'll be right here with us. We'll be right back.
Just as the slave master in that day used tongues, the house Negro.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Chocolate coated beauty as dark as the night. you've come so far. Woman of color, at the end of the road, I brush up against you in some unspoken code. I yearn for the closeness we are so overdue. Show me the garden of pleasure in you. Brown skin lady, so hard to ignore. A portrait of sweetness I have to explore. As soft as the measure of the love that you give.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com, blacktalkradionetwork.com. Black Talk Radio Network is the number one Black Talk podcast in the nation. Well, probably could say the world, but we're going to go right back to our guest, Dr. Anoka Rashidi, and get some phone calls. Are you with me, Doc?
I'm right here, brother.
Right on, Baba. Appreciate you, man. Okay, we're going to take a call here.
I got off too early.
Hey,
it only added 1 minute. We were going to be there 4 minutes. We were going to be there.
Let me try another one here. 404-404. You're on with Dr. Anoka Rashidi, 404.
Yes, is that me?
That's you. Go ahead.
Hotep Brothers.
Hotep.
Hotep Brother Rashidi. I'm just sitting here again, going up to the mountaintop, being absolutely exhilarated and fascinated by not just the talk, but by the work. Brother Renoko and Brother Oshi, we of the African civilization and community want you to know that it is not a thankless task. It is not a work unrecognized and unnoted and unneeded, because you never know who you are going to inspire to take your place. And we do need to support you more. Perhaps we can recognize this fact now and support you and all the teachers and the diggers and the excavators to bring us this light and this truth and this knowledge back to us once again. So I appreciate it so much, and thank you is not enough, but it's all we have for now. That's not all we have for now. So perhaps we'll do better.
Well, I appreciate that, Betsy. Thank you very much. You know, we didn't talk much about the role of African women in history, but African women have just had an incredible role in the history, not just of the African world, but the world in general. Mm-hmm. African women have had an international impact. That was one of the reasons I was so keen about having, again, our sister Dorothy Best on. She is a wonderful African woman, a community activist, but the information that she has about our history is really, really remarkable. I mm-hmm. think that sisters have something unique to offer, and we cannot say enough good things about them. So, sister, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Queen, for the call. Let me see. We got another caller here, and let's see where... 703-703. You're on with Dr. Renoka Rashidi and Baba Oshi. 703? Maybe they just want to listen, which is perfectly okay with me. And we had two other calls, but they hung up. But that's okay. And you know, give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. You know,
well, let's continue our global journey, if you don't mind.
Please, let's do it.
Let's go to Asia. We've heard about the Asiatic black man, and there is something to that.
Is
African
it?
People have is occupied it? All parts of Asia from the most ancient times. We are the original people.
Right.
Humanity began in Africa, and Asia is the first continent, so-called continent, that those Africans spread to. So you have African people as the first people in Asia, and we see a classic example of that, maybe the best example, in the Andaman Islands. From time to time, a lot of us will see images of sisters and brothers called the Jarawa or the Onje. And these are black folk who live in the Indian Ocean, in the Bay of Bengal, and what are called the Andaman Islands. They've probably been there for perhaps 60,000 years.
Wow.
And they seem to be the remnant of the first people to leave Africa and migrate into Asia. Now, Ivan Van Sertima used to say all the time, Renoko, it's one thing to say that you were first, but it's even more important to say what you did. Mm-hmm. And so we find African people at the foundation of classical Asian civilization. The first one that stands out is Sumer. This is based on the Tigris-Euphrates River rivers in Iraq. Ancient civilizations tend to be based along the banks of rivers because rivers, by their nature, facilitate transportation, irrigation, and communication. And thus the Nile was so important.
Right.
But you have several river-based civilizations in Asia, too. And black folk are fundamental. The Sumerians call themselves the black-headed people. And in biblical texts, in the Old Testament, they're identified with Nimrod. It is said Nimrod was a mighty hunter before the Lord. He was a son of Cush, or a grandson of Cush, the mm-hmm. offspring of the Nile Valley.
He was also from Canaan, correct?
Well, I think you have the four sons of Ham. They mm-hmm. are, I believe, Canaan, Cush,
Shem, Cush, Ham, and Japheth.
Probably Somalia, mm-hmm. yeah, and Mishraim. Now, those are the sons of Ham, and they are identified as black. Ham is the brother.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says, and Cush begat Nimrod.
Okay.
So Nimrod, the founder in biblical tradition, in the Old Testament tradition, the founder of civilization along the Tigris-Euphrates, is the son of Cush, the son of the Upper Nile Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And so this civilization flourished for more than 1,000 years. There were great astronomers and mathematicians and pharmacists, and they wrote great literature. And then if we were to go farther east, you can find something similar in the Indus Valley. The Indus Valley is in now what we call Pakistan. And this is an ancient black civilization in South Asia.
Is that
if we were to move further east and go to China, you will see something similar in ancient China along the Yellow River and Yangtze River valleys. And there you have the birth of what is called the Shang Dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
The Shang is the first historical dynasty in China. And the people that came after the Shang, the Zhou, described the Shang as having black and oily skin. If we go to Southeast Asia, we can find something similar in Cambodia and Thailand and Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Japan, it is said to make a good samurai, half the blood in one's veins must be black.
Mm-hmm.
So you have these traditions and actual physical evidence of African people, not just in the motherland itself, but the impact and presence of African people in the far-flung corners of the earth. And Asia is no exception to that.
Because the first people anywhere are us. It just exists that after a series of climate situations and whatever the environment became, we had to adapt. Because either you adapt.
But African people also kept coming.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't just one migration. History is the movements of people. So we were to shift, for example, to the Americas, we would not only be able to say that African people are the first people, or people of African heritage at the very least, are the first people to set foot in what is now the Western Hemisphere, but you also have the African presence among the Olmec. But that's not the only African voyage or movement to the Americas. We know, for example, that the predecessor of Mansa Musa, a man named Abubakar II, according to Malian tradition,
right,
West
sailed.
African tradition, built a fleet of ships
and
came to the Americas. Now, this is not the Olmec.
This
is much later.
Right.
So you have continuously the movements of African people around the world. And we need to understand that. If Columbus could come here, if the Vikings could come, if the conquistadors could come, if the pilgrims could come, why couldn't Africans come?
Exactly.
Africa is closer to America than Europe is, and than Asia is.
Mm-hmm.
And there are currents that take you from the west coast of Africa. African people have seafaring traditions. There's a report that I haven't really been able to follow up on that they found a boat in Nigeria that's 8,000 years old. Nigeria is on the Atlantic coast of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to begin to think about Africa in a different light. And we need to think about ourselves in a different light.
Mm-hmm.
So, history is very exciting, and we need something to excite us. And it's more than that. It's a map. Mm-hmm. John Emory Clark said it was like a compass.
He said that
the relationship between a people and their history is no different between the relationship and a people, the relationship between a mother and her child. So if we could just ingrain this into the minds of our people, the importance of knowledge of self. Brother be talking, I ain't got time for that. I got to hustle. I got to do this. I got to do that. But keep in mind that all strong people emphasize their history all the time, and weak people don't. And you can directly measure a people's status in the world by the emphasis that they put on their history and culture.
Mm. Yeah, and ours don't look too good, does it? At times, because
we're gonna be all right, man.
Oh no,
we're gonna be all right.
I agree with you because I'm optimistic, even though many things I say and present, that's only because in the physical reality that is where it is at this time. But that, just like what we're talking about now, we're talking about before Europeans came into the lives of African people. What were we doing? Where were we? Well, you now can see we were all around the globe. The first people almost anywhere were us, you know, although that's something that people who believe that we are in Africans are indigenous to America and that we should fight for reparations, not and that the African captivity and that trade didn't happen. I find kind of troubling personally, you know.
Yeah.
You know, but.
Those are people I consider lunatics, man. But on the other hand, I think, too, that it shows the horrors of enslavement and how many of us make a conscious effort to distance ourselves from that. And I think that there are many aspects that feed into it. One is a kind of an anti-Africanism. And I think that's just the result of being told that Africa is worse than hell for so long.
Yeah.
And then the horrors of enslavement. So it's not unnatural for a person to say, that didn't happen. Or even if it did happen, that wasn't my ancestors. That was someone else.
Mm-hmm.
So over time, we have to begin to change our perceptions. And I think that we are gradually doing that.
Well, yeah, because
little by little.
Because once
again, we use social media to help, man.
Right.
Why do you think I'm on your show? Why are you on this show?
Right.
Because we're trying to change the public opinion or the mental perception that we have as a community. You know that, and that's what drives us.
And
that gives us hope.
And see, and you constantly putting out that information, I mean, you be putting out some beautiful pictures of us. I mean, I've seen pictures of us all around the globe. Not ancient. I'm talking about present. Present people, an African presence of people in Southeast Asia, in India, all around the world of African people. Sisters, beautiful sisters who have beautiful dark brown skin and close curled hair. You also have sisters who have dark brown skin and have straight hair naturally, or has in Australia, blonde hair, you know. But when you look at them, they're unmistakably, they're African. You know, they're black, they're dark skinned people, you know. And so I think that, you know, that's why, like I say, once again, I always will, because to me, there's nothing more important than knowledge of self. There's nothing more important than infusing yourself with that knowledge to make you not just to make you feel good, but know who you are and know what you are, you're capable of, having an expectation. And then going out there to achieve it. And more other, the other thing about that is begin to love yourself and love each other.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And to begin to work with one another.
And trust one another.
Yes.
Have faith in one another. Mm-hmm. Believe in one another.
Yes.
You know, all of those things, brother, we gotta step it up. I don't get mad at Europeans for talking about their history. We've all heard of European heroes, Julius Caesar and Napoleon and George Washington. We even know about bad white people. We know about Al Capone.
Yeah, gangsters.
Jack the Ripper. Even the fictional ones, Count Dracula.
Yeah.
But how many of us can name a single African who lived before the transatlantic slave trade? I'm talking about the sisters and brothers in the community.
Right.
So we have work to do. We got work to do.
Because like I said, that's why prior to that, you had just explained, just within the last 15 minutes, debunks all of the stuff that many of our people believe that we have never done anything. Yeah. And we were waiting for Europeans to bring us light and information. And nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, what the European has done that is so devastating is that they conquered our minds, and for many of our people, it's hard for them to envision, to even conceptualize what you were talking about, because all the thing that we believe that we were in these little huts, in these little tribes, and then we got taken, put into those castles. That's another reason why I'm saying words have meaning. Put into a castle.
I hear you, brother. That's a very good example.
It's a damn good example. It is. Because if I say close your eyes and I use the word castle, you know, you're going to think of Walt Disney. You ain't going to think of that. But because we've been trained to think of that, that's a castle? No, it's a dungeon. You know? So.
Now, I've already mentioned, brother, the children's dungeon.
Yeah.
In Senegal. You know, so there have been times when I've said, and I've even said it this morning, that one of the missions must be the destruction of the myth of the docile slave. That is very, very important to emphasize that African people fought back. But I think that we still have to talk about the horrors of enslavement, too. I think a lot of people, particularly young people, really don't realize, you know, what a horrific experience that actually was. Mm-hmm. And because it was so horrible, I think a lot of us, you know, just prefer to kind of gloss over it, mm-hmm. you know, and not talk too much about it. Because
yeah.
we talk about slavery so much anyway. But I think it's important, too, just to even revisit that, to revisit all aspects of our history, but revisit them from an African perspective,
right.
from our perspective, and not right. the perspective of the people who, in fact, enslaved us, or the mm-hmm. descendants of the people who enslaved us
mm-hmm.
and colonized us. That's another thing. We need to keep in mind that enslavement and colonization is going on roughly at the same time.
Right.
That the experience of Africans in the diaspora or the global African community parallels the occupation and invasion of Africa itself. And the same people who enslaved us colonized them. I think that there's a tendency sometimes on the part of those of us to look at Africa as a kind of a utopian paradise. So you have the extremes. On the one hand, Africa is the jungle, and it's where these savages ran through chasing missionaries looking for dinner. That's one view. And then the other side is the view that Africa is a kind of a paradise. It's a kind of a utopia that a lot of people in the movement, I think, have, who love Africa but who have not been to Africa and who have not experienced the realities of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And then you realize that the sisters and brothers in the motherland have much the same problems that we do, perhaps even worse. And mm-hmm. that brings me back to the belief that Africans in America are in such a strategic position to mold and shape the entire future of the African world. We have more resources than most Africans do. And we have a relative degree of freedom of speech and mobility.
Right.
I'm sorry to say that most Africans don't have.
Right.
So we have the tools.
Right.
We have the tools.
That's why
it's up to us to work it.
Right. That's why I say the responsibility. We have just as much right and responsibility to help liberate Africa as well. In fact, we are, just as you just mentioned, we're probably some of the most technologically advanced Africans on the planet. And what if the skills that we acquired were not to beg Caucasians for jobs, but the skills we acquired were to go home to help brothers and sisters, you know, build Africa? I have a red hat that I wear that I had made, and it's just like Trump, make America, yuck. Make America great again. But mine is make Africa home again. So people do a double take. Mine is in red lettering specifically because Trump was in white lettering. Mine is in Mine is in black lettering specifically because, you know, I want you to see that make. And when people see that and they say again, you know, they don't look at the two words in between. You know, and they're thinking like, you know, double take. What is it? Oshi gone? Trump is so important, Trump. You know, but what it is make Africa home again. And to me, that's to me is the ultimate goal for African people. Because if I'm consistently saying that this program and myself particularly supports independence of African people, you know, supports self-determination for African people. Liberation for our people and sovereignty for our people. And the only place that really truly could be done is on the continent, because everywhere else it's going to be a battle. And of course, you know, we may not be outmanned, but we shown the hell is outgunned, especially because, as I say all the time, Baba, one thing about the European, he's always found a better way to kill your ass. You know, from the time he had a club to swords and spears, catapults, crossbows. I mean, he's always trying to find a better way to kill you, you know, until now. To now, you know, he's got drones and he's got all kinds of other stuff that he can poison. You know, that's why, to me, when I think of the strong men and women, and especially when they die and they say, well, they had cancer or this or that, you know, or just as in the case of El-Haj Malik El-Shabazz and Dr. King, I mean, the others, this system found a way to get rid of them, to get rid of their voice, you know. That's how I look at it. Because, I mean, I don't put anything past these folks from doing anything they feel they have to do to maintain and sustain the privilege that they've created, you know.
No, you would be naive to do that. Mm-hmm. And we are, in many ways, a very naive people.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, to continue to expect justice from the people. I mean, here's what I would say. Everything that we do, I think, has to be an exercise in achieving power. That's really what it's all about. When in the 1960s, Stokely Carmichael then and Willie Ricks and other folk begin to call for black power, they were really on to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Stokely Carmichael, who changed his name to Kwame Ture, eventually would say, racism is about power. If a white man has the power to lynch me, I mean, if a white man wants to lynch me, that's his problem.
Mm-hmm.
But if he has the power to lynch me, that's my problem. And so yeah. What we are talking about is achieving power so that nobody can mess with us.
Yeah.
And that we can mold and shape the world in a righteous way.
Right.
One of the things that bothers me a great deal these days, and I don't hear, I guess we have so many issues, is climate change. Look at what happened to mm-hmm. the Bahamas not long ago,
mm-hmm.
man.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to take power.
Yeah.
So we can work in harmony with the world again, with nature, with our mother.
Mm-hmm.
And we can build a society that's based on righteousness, but we have to be able to protect that society. And we have to be able to protect ourselves. At some point in time, we have to talk about policing our own communities. We have to do everything it takes to make a nation. Mm-hmm. And the idea, and, you know, I think even Garvey said it, any leadership that teaches you to depend on another people is a leadership that will enslave you, or worse to that effect. We have to be self-sufficient in everything, and we have to build power. And the knowledge of self is an instrument in that.
Right.
It tells you what you're capable of.
Right.
So we keep going back to the basics all the time. Black men need to be with black women.
I say.
And black folk need to be a part of an organization.
I say.
And we have to do a better job in terms of educating our children.
Definitely, I say.
You know, so all yeah. of these basic things have to support the scholars and activists in our community
yeah.
who are talking this kind of talk. Have to support the brothers and sisters in the community like you who are involved in social media trying to put the word out.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to just return to the basics. And if we just do the most basic thing, I think that we would be astonished by the change in our community.
I think what's problematic is the fact that, you know, the Europeans, you know, once they took the chains off our ankles and they put them on our minds, I use this analogy that they have a vice grip on our mind. And, you know, understanding and knowing that tool, that once you set the clamp, the vice, you can't pull it. You know, nobody can pull it apart. It's set. The vice grip is set. But there's a knob at the end of the handle. Turning of that knob is symbolic of acquiring knowledge of self. And once you continue to turn that knob, now the tension is released and you can open up the vice grip. Your mind is free. And you can see the European for who and what he is. Not that you challenge them because they suffer from cognitive dissonance. This is a serious waste of time dealing with Europeans. What you must do is challenge yourself to challenge each other to be better, to do better, to work with one another, trust one another, build with one another. That is our goal, to be independent. When you mention power, every time I hear that word, I think of Dr. Wade Nobles and his definition of power, which I think is most definitive. You know,
it is.
It really is, Baba, because power is not politics. We have more people in politics than we've ever had. And yet our condition as a people is still very tenuous. You know, it is not money, because the money is theirs. Hell, if they want to change. In fact, talking about the money, I don't know about you, but I'm adamant against Armentia, Sister Harriet Tubman, being on the $20 bill, especially with Andrew Jackson being on the back of it. I mean, that is blasphemous. She would be.
You know, I hadn't heard that perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. She's going to be on the $20 bill supposedly in the next 2 years or so, unless they've done away with it. I know Trump and his Treasury, Mnuchin, said they're not going to do that. It's not going to happen. But that isn't contingent upon him winning another term, because it's supposed to happen in 2021 or something like that. But I hope it doesn't happen. I hope that sisters say and brothers say, no, we don't want that sister who fought so hard. Because to me, she'd be rolling over in her grave. We don't have any economic independence in this country.
An interesting perspective, because everybody I've been hearing talking about it is so gung-ho. And they were disappointed when Mnuchin or whatever his name kind of backtracked on that.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't thought about that perspective. In fact, last month, I did some presentations in Buffalo, New York.
Buffalo.
And I was selling books and calendars and stuff. Mm-hmm. Marcus Garvey was big up there. And mm-hmm. Harry Tubman passed through there. And somebody, I didn't realize it until later, gave me some $20 bills that Harry Tubman's face had been stenciled on.
Okay.
On over edge. You know, I had a hard time getting rid of that money, man. I had a hard time getting rid of that money, but they were just determined that it was going to carry it, you know, no matter what, man.
Oh, yeah. I had a sister, you know, I was back in Milwaukee, visiting Milwaukee back at home, and one of our places, and we had a discussion, and that sister was just, I mean, she was adamant about it, just feeling great about the fact that a black woman is going to be on the currency of this country, you know. And I'm saying that we have no economic independence. It is, the money still is not ours. You know, it is theirs. And so.
Well, check this out, man. Check this out. Now, here's something that really drives me crazy.
Okay.
When I hear a black person say, an African-American, an African living in America, talk about the founding fathers. The founding fathers. You know, I hear people, you know, I follow the news a lot. I'm watching it now.
Right.
Listen, people have been talking all of that. So you have these African-American commentators on CNN and MSNBC. I assume Fox also.
You have
and
a few.
Talking about what the founding fathers intended. And that, I don't know if I should just laugh or just be disgusted. The
I know.
These slave owners.
Yeah, you know? I'm Brother Baba, I'm laughing in my disgust.
Yeah.
You know.
The founding fathers.
Yeah. You know. And praising them for creating this, you know.
We were three-fifths of a man.
Yeah, three-fifths of a person. Yep.
Three-fifths of a person.
Yeah. So that's because that's how they counted us.
And that is the mentality that I think European society in this country has. I started to say the dominant society, and then I caught myself. Mm-hmm. That is the view that I think they have of us.
Yes.
That black men are by nature criminals. And that's why that woman shot that brother in his own apartment.
Yes.
That black people are less than. And the sad part is that a lot of us incorporate that. Mm-hmm. We see ourselves, I believe, as that.
Yes.
And that's the part that's the tough one, man.
It is, because
once we begin to change how we see ourselves, we would demand that other people change how they see us and how they treat us.
Well, see, if we were in control of the narrative, if we were in control of what is being visualized, then that would happen, especially us with the right mind. But the fact that we are not, and we're bombarded 24/7, 365 with these images and these notions of who we're not, but based upon society, that's who we are. Because, you know, I used to do a thing when I was in Milwaukee, when I was on the fire department. I would go to these schools on my off days, you know, because a firefighter, we work one day off too. In fact, one good firefighter from Houston told me to tell you, Brother Taha, told me to tell you what's up, Brother Taha Houston.
Send him my regards, man.
I sure will.
Thinking about him.
I sure will. Good brother. Yeah, me and him have all had long talks. We would sit down. We got these conferences, man. And you know, we were on a different, you know, mindset than the other brothers and sisters. But that be it so, you know. But, you know, if we don't begin to not just think in this manner, but begin to behave differently and act differently and work, it is a tenuous position for us. I'm optimistic, but I believe a lot of us are going to fall, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm optimistic most of the time, about 95% of the time.
I agree.
Because, again, I like what I do. That right. really, to me, is the thing that sustains me. You know, you had Huey Newton, who wrote a book called Revolutionary Suicide. And Garvey even talked, I think, about sometimes the curse of Black leadership, what a burden and responsibility that is. And then I talked to a lot of the great historians, at least some of them, people like John G. Jackson and Chancellor Williams and what have you, who just, I think, spend most of their lives, you know, struggling for our people. And then at the end of their lives, really began to doubt if it was worth the effort. You know, and in some cases never got the recognition that they deserve.
Right.
But for me, I love what I do. I love what I do. And I probably get more recognition maybe than I deserve. I get a lot of pats on the head. What I want is more people to say, Renoco, how can I help?
Right.
What can I do?
Yeah. And that's what
you know, what do you need?
And that's what's even more necessary.
It's what I need.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I want people to be able to say it's not about you, Renoco Rashidi, it's about us.
Mm-hmm.
That you represent us, that you are researching us, you're doing it for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't do what you do, but I can help what you do because we're all in this together. Now, that is really what I seek and desire. But in the meantime, brother, I'm going to keep on going. I'm going to keep on pushing. This is all I know, and this is, you know, this is what I'm about. I love Black folk, and I love the research that I do. So when you have that kind of love, you know, for yourself, for your people, you feel like you're doing something righteous, something good, something that will impact generations to come. Well, that's a pretty good life.
Yes,
and I have
is.
That. I feel blessed.
You are, brother. You really are. I remember when I first saw you in When Black Men Rule, my good brother, LeGrand Clegg.
You had to bring that up. Thank you for that. You made my day. Thank you so much.
But yeah, Dr. Finch is in it too. There's a few others. It was great. That was one of my first things I used to help the young people I was working with to help them understand, because I knew they were not going to get that information in the public school. And so I wanted to infuse them with a cursory knowledge of who they were. So I brought those out, brought that DVD out, which actually was a VHS when I first had it, you know, and then, I would explain that, got more information, of course, and more start coming in. And I tell you, I mean, there's a plethora of information. It is bona fide and substantiated. But yet still today, the majority of our people on the continent, in the diaspora, and particularly here, still don't know it. They still don't know
it. Well, we got to encourage them to want to know.
You know?
Now, I'll go back to my sister Dorothy Best one more time. We've been exchanging messages since we've been talking. She's somebody that I really, really admire a lot. I like her a lot, and she's brilliant, and she has all this information. Now, one of the things that she talks about, she, I think, is of the belief, and she can, you know, elaborate on this the next time she's on your show. I think she's of the belief that the most effective way for her to get us is to deal with it from an African-American perspective. Because that's something that a lot of sisters and brothers can relate to.
Right.
I think she's of the belief that it's easier for them to relate to a Carter G. Woodson or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Because Harriet Tubman, she's done a lot of research on Harriet.
Mm-hmm.
And then once we get them hooked on that, then they're ready for Africa. Me, mm-hmm. I'm just the opposite of that. I tend to start at the very beginning. Africa is the birthplace. And then Africa as the mother of civilization as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that we have to all find creative ways to reach the people and to excite them, to make them want to know. You know, it's one thing not to know, but it's another thing not to want to know and not to care.
Yeah.
And if we can create an excitement in our community about wanting to know who we are in our history, we turn the world upside down right quick. It would have a fundamental impact in our community.
It would.
And so that's what we're seeking to do.
Well, you know, when you said that, it reminded me of two quotes. One by my favorite quote, my favorite quote by Dr. King. You know, Dr. King is most quoted, but there's one that hardly a lot of people don't even know or remember. And that quote is, there's nothing more dangerous than conscientious stupidity. No, excuse me. There's nothing more dangerous than conscientious stupidity and sincere ignorance.
No, a right to the kisser, man. He's on point.
Yeah. You know,
why don't you repeat that, brother?
There's nothing more dangerous than conscientious stupidity and sincere ignorance. Conscientious stupidity and you know, because there, some of us, ignorance is simply absence of knowledge. You know, you can, what you have done over the millennia, over these last two decades, I've known you about 20 years now. I figured it out. I was like, when I first met you, it was in Cleveland at an ASCAC. You don't even go to ASCAC no more, you know.
No, I don't, man. ASCAC doesn't invite me anymore. So, I remember that, man.
Yeah.
ASCAC was a wonderful experience in my life.
Yeah.
You know, I interacted with a lot of, you know, one of my defects is I'm a very, and many people will find this hard to believe, a very bashful, very reserved person, you know, to almost to the point of being antisocial. I've always been uncomfortable, believe it or not, in social settings. And I've become very passionate about this because, I mean, it's the life of our people.
Right.
But going to some of these conferences, coming out of my shell, and the years that I participated in ASCAC were wonderful. And I really, really benefited from that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to impact a lot of people. So I have to almost force myself to be more than Renoko Rashidi, the scholar and researcher, and interact more with like-minded people.
Mm-hmm.
That may sound very basic, but that's a challenge I've always had. Just a kind of a shyness, a bashfulness a lot of people find hard to believe. Because I can easily get up and speak in front of 1,000 people and not miss a beat.
Yeah.
But there are many, many contradictions in our struggle and in our lives and in our personalities.
That's right. Exactly. And it's a constant thing every day to deal with. I mean, you know, myself included, all of us, you know, I know there's always every day attacks on our Africanness. I mean, we're bombarded 24/7, 365. But let me get back to the other quote. This is man on the street, brother on the street, brother on the street. Okay. The interviewer came up to brother on the street, brother on the street. Excuse me. Yeah. What? What adversely affects the black community the most? Is it ignorance or is it apathy? Brother on the street ponders the question, scratching his head, scratching his ass. He says, you know what? I don't know and I don't care.
Now that really hits home, man.
Yeah.
That hits home.
It does. Because that's real. Because the apathy is so deep. And the fact that a lot of us don't want to, we're not saying if we knew better, we do better. Well, a lot of us don't want to know because by knowing, it automatically changes or should change your behavior, change your attitude. We don't want to know. We want to be in this ignorant bliss, you know, and continue to do whatever it is we do and just surviving from day to day. We don't want to propel ourselves to a height better than what we are experiencing, a height where we love one another, trust one another, work with one another, and build with one another, have good family life, have children who are growing in a way that is positive, growing in a way that is intellectual, growing in a way that will further sustain ourselves. A lot of us don't want that, man, you know? It's deep.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, brother.
You know?
I fully agree with you.
Yeah, but that...
We are content. Somebody said we have decided to become content with the food of chickens. We are actually eagles that soar or something like that.
Mm-hmm. So, well, you know, that reminds me of that one with the chickens who captured that baby eagle. That story, you know, where the chickens captured a baby eaglet and made that eaglet look like, or make the eaglet think that it was a chicken. You know, they kept impressing upon the eagle that you're a chicken. You got to walk like a chicken. You got to talk like a chicken. You got to look like a chicken. You know, so every day the baby eagle would try to do whatever he could to fit in. You know, one day a majestic eagle was flying over the chicken yard, perched himself high up on a branch. And then he looked down and he saw a baby eaglet down there, a little eagle down there. And he said, "Hey, hey, you, what you doing down there with all those chickens?" The little eagle looked up and said, "Who are you talking about, me?" "Yes, you." "Well, I ain't no eagle. I'm a chicken." "No, you're not. You're an eagle." "No, no, I'm a chicken. I walk like a chicken. I talk like a chicken. I think like a chicken. And I'm trying my best to look like a chicken." He says, "No, I know you. You're an eagle. I know your parents. I know your father who rescued young eagles from chickens decades ago. Now get up here and fly. Get up here. Come with me and fly." "I'm a chicken. Chickens can't fly." "No, you're an eagle." So once he infused himself, the little baby eagle started to test his wings and was astonished how he could elevate. And then he went and then tested it really. I mean, he just really soared. I mean, he sat himself right up on that perch with the majestic eagle. He said, "Now let's fly. Let's really fly." And they began to fly over all of the ignorance, all the mountains of despair and hopelessness. And they flew towards the sun. And that message is, of course, that we're eagles. But these folks got us thinking we're chickens. And we try to act and behave just like these chickens. We ain't chickens. We're eagles. So let's fly. Let's soar. You know, and that's the mentality that we need to have, that we're eagles, that we're not.
Yeah, that's European. A liberation mentality.
Yes, it is.
And when we're ready to flap our wings, we'll destroy
this
phase that we sometimes call white supremacy right quick. Well, my brother, I know we're running out of time.
Oh, yes,
again,
we are.
I want you to think about me as I travel.
Oh, brother, I always do.
Show probably in December.
Okay.
And I have a lot to share.
Okay.
In the meantime, if people want to get in contact with me, they can call me after the show at area code 323-803-8663. That's 323-803-8663. Email is even better. Renoco@hotmail.com. That's Renoco@hotmail.com. You can go to my website, drrenoco.com, drrenoco.com. Make a donation, purchase a book, a DVD. Find out about my tours. Don't forget my West African tour, Gambia, Senegal, Guinea-Bissau in January, February. But it's been a pleasure to be on your show. Once again, I really appreciate what you do. I admire your consistency. I know it's not easy all the time, but we're going in a good direction, brother.
Yes, we are.
As Lennon Jeffrey says, we're moving on a victorious path.
That's right.
So let's keep walking together and see what we can accomplish.
Well,
I appreciate you, Brother Oshi.
I appreciate you too, Baba Renoco. I consider you, and from the moment that we met each other way back then, a friend, a real friend. And I'm honored to know you. I'm honored to support you. And I promote you in any and all chances that I get, because you are a primary researcher and historian. You bring it to us. No straight, no chaser. And I love you for it. You take care of your brother.
Stay strong, brother. Thank
all right.
You. Hotel.
Hotel. Hotel. That's my brother, my good friend, Brother Renoco Rashidi. It's always an honor to have him on. I'm going to be promoting his West African tour up until the time that he begins to take off. So, and I will continue to get his information out there. So if you want to, like I said, three countries, Senegal, Gambia, and Guinea-Bissau for just under $4,000, you know, and looking at about 14 days, you know, you can't beat that, honestly. Really is. He put together a great tour at this time. And I know he's going to Kemet. He's going to Kemet. He's got a tour coming up, going to Kemet and the Sudan, you know. And so that's another tour that's coming up this month, the 23rd. So if you're going to go to Kemet and the Sudan from the 23rd to the 14th, it's extended. So, you know, and can't beat him, man. So I look forward to when he gets back so we can talk about that trip and then get prepared, have him getting prepared for the West African trip. Yeah. So today, though, this afternoon, after my program, Brother Franklin Jones is away. So what I'm going to do is play a program when Brother Franklin's first, you know, Brother Franklin came on my program as a co-host on Wednesdays for about a good while before he got his own program. So this, what I'm going to play is from last year at this time, and back in October of this time. And so if you want to listen to that, please do so. It's going to be a good program. Of course, no phone calls because it's a pre-recorded program. You know, but I did appreciate all those brothers and sisters who called in, and some who were calling just to listen. I appreciate my sister Queen. She's always there. Appreciate her. And then the many others who call in and listen. I know I have some callers who haven't called in a while, but that's okay. I hope that they're busy and they may be working. That's a good thing, you know. In fact, talking with Brother Elliot with Time for an Awakening, my program is okay. You know, there I have listeners. Because a lot of times I don't see it because I don't see the call-ins, but I have listeners. And so that's encouraging because, honestly, I would do this if nobody was listening. I would take these 2 hours and read what I'm going to read, say what I'm going to say, do what I have to do. It is my contribution to the independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for our people. There's nothing important than liberating the minds of African people at this juncture of our lives. Nothing important. And I, not just here in America, but throughout the diaspora and truly on the continent. Nothing more important. And I've had discussions with brothers and sisters about doing this, that, and the other. And my contention is the only place that we can do anything is on the continent of Africa. You know, I love the Republic of New Africa, but the idea of getting some states in the South in the midst of an open and sworn enemy, you know, doesn't set well. There's too many examples, as Malcolm said, of all our studies. History is best qualified to reward our research. Brothers and sisters, I thank you for listening. In the words of Stephen Biko, the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the MIND, but the MINE, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace, and Asante Sana means thank you. Brothers and sisters, a Bibi Fahodio. Bibi Fahodio means our victorious destiny. Bibi Fahodio family. Peace.
A Bibi Fahodio.
Bibi Fahodio, Queen.